Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
And we are back. Look at that lineup. We've got six of the most handsome gentlemen in all of San Diego lined up for you. Or if you're listening on the radio, you can imagine it. If you're watching on our YouTube stream, you know that's not really the case.
But I just got out of hair and makeup. I'm ready to roll.
We are here to talk some Padres baseball, though commercial-free, over the next hour. From my far left, Matt Scraby, Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Braden Suprenant, and Chris Ello with you for the next hour. And generally on the Padres Roundtable, I like to keep things a little more general. People are going to be listening to this probably over the next couple of days. But with the Padres coming off, maybe their toughest emotional loss of the season last night, 4-3 in 10 innings to the New York Yankees. I want to start with that game in particular. I was just talking with Adam in the hallway as well. The 10th inning, the strategic decisions by Mike Schilt, to play for obviously multiple runs in the top of the inning and then not to walk the runner, J.C. Escara, in the bottom of the inning to set up the double play, ended up biting the team. Do you feel like, Chris, that Mike Schilt played that incorrectly? Would you have done anything differently in the 10th inning yesterday?
I don't think so. I mean, you had the right guys up there. Fernando struck out. Machado struck out, and then Bogart struck out. Your three highest-paid players all had a chance to drive in a run. I don't think you can play for one run in the top of an inning, in extra innings. I think you got to play for more than one. In the bottom of the inning, you might. Well, after the guy hit the fly ball, you say, "Well, we probably should have walked him."
Yeah.
I was thinking about that at bat. Escara is the backup catcher for the Yankees, so I think he's thinking along with what the Padres are thinking there. And you got a runner at third with one out, and you got Estrada, who has a great, splitter. And I think if he throws the splitter, he probably strikes him out, but he didn't really want to risk the splitter because if it bounces and it gets away, they win the game. And I think Escara outthought him and thought, you know what, I'm going to get a fastball. He was able to get pretty good wood on it and hit it far enough to win the game. So,
and Paulie, the advantage in that situation, while it's almost always with the pitcher, when you're a batter and you know all you need is a fly ball, you can choke up a little bit, you can change your swing just to make contact in that situation.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so frustrating for the top half of that inning when you just needed something out of the infield, just do something, and it just didn't work. But I totally agree with what Chris had to say. I think it opens up, it sounds like sour grapes when you're on the losing end of it, but it does open up some discussion on how extra innings are played in Major League Baseball, because it does feel like when you're the road team, at least for me, in my head, internally, I'm assuming the home team's getting that first guy in from second base. I'm assuming. So you have to play for more than one run. Just didn't work out. And that's just the way it is sometimes. The heart of your order is going to strike out three times in a row consecutively every once in a while. It just happened to be at the most critical point of the game, and you end up getting the loss, and it sucks. But for me, that's an easy one to flush and move on from.
And Woods, you brought it up this morning as well. You were kind of in favor of the ghost runner rule when it was when it was developed, but it's definitely showing that it's not the best way to determine a winner of a game, if you're going to extra innings.
Yeah, I was when it happened. I thought, these 16, 17 inning games can be a bit sloggy at times, and I really thought, and the reason that I was so in favor of it was because, hey, we are building a really good team here in San Diego, right? And there's aspirations of playoffs, and there's aspirations of a World Series championship. When you get to the end, let's say you play 10 of those, right? 15 inning games, it's just fewer bullets that your bullpen has. So I thought, man, now that we may be actually talking about pennant races and stuff here, if we can get these games going, get them in, save some bullets for later in the year. You saw how important the bullpen was to the Dodgers last year. You've seen the after effects of the World Series on the Dodgers pitching this year. Relievers are so volatile. I just thought to myself, for a contending team, this actually may be a good thing to get these games done and over with in the 10th.
Matt, would you be in favor of a compromise solution? Perhaps in the 10th inning, you play it straight up with no runners on. Then as, you know, the 11th inning, you put a runner on second. 12th inning, you put a runner on third.
Then it's rock, paper, scissors after that, and then it's over.
Yeah, 12th inning, bases loaded.
I agree with Woods, though. You don't want the game to go on forever, but it's so skewed, I think, toward the home team with that strategic advantage of knowing what the visitors did in the top of the inning that it really is never going to be a great, fair way to determine a baseball game.
Yeah, I was thinking about this on the drive down, actually. It should be something like that where you start the 10th with no runners on and see who can win the game outright. Because if you're the home team and the visiting team doesn't score,
it's a dub.
Exactly. The move immediately is to do what the Yankees did, which was bunt, move the guy over to third, take your two outs and try to get him in. So I would like to see maybe 11th, 12th inning, putting guys on base, but give the teams a chance to actually to win the game in a real way.
But Brady, nobody wants 17 inning games.
No.
Like nobody wants. And no. I think the new rules have helped. I don't see a lot of 16, 17, 18 inning games anymore, but this is starting to feel kind of like a little NFL-ish where team that wins a coin toss probably going to win the game.
Yeah.
But Braden, would you agree that if you're the visiting team, you can't play for the one run? You can't send Fernando Tatis Jr. out to bunt Brandon Lockridge over to third just to hope you get the one run and then think that's going to be enough in the 10th inning.
No, probably not. You know, especially with Fernando up, I mean, you got to let that guy swing. You know, if he would have bunted him over, people would have been upset. Why are we bunting Fernando?
Yeah.
You know, even though the result would have been more productive than him striking out. But like Chris said, I mean, your top three paid guys all struck out in that spot. And the thing is, all those guys that, you know, we talk about Manny, you know, coming up with bases loaded and what his average is and all that stuff. It's like, if you're hitting over 300 in those situations, you're really, really good at it, which means you're going to fail 70% of the time, which means those guys happen to fail during their 70%, those three batters that came up. In terms of the overall rules on second base, like I try to view it not as a selfish media member of like having to work the game and understand, like, I don't want to drag through 17 because I have to be here for work and kind of understand it from a fan perspective. There's not a lot of fans that don't love free baseball, but on top of that, my argument all the time was, if you don't want to watch it, turn the TV off and go to bed. You don't have to watch the entire game. And if you're at the game, you can leave. But in terms of the Manfred man, I don't mind what they're doing and speeding up the game. I'm surprised that they haven't decided to do like what hockey does or like any type of sport that has point systems. You make it to extras, you get a point in the standings, you get a win, you get 3 points in the standings, you do a point system for the standings throughout the year. So if you make it to extra innings, Padres get rewarded for having a tight game, and then you're just trying to end the game as quickly as possible. That's why they have those in those sports when they decide to go 3-on-3 hockey or go to a shootout.
I have a thought. Braden's interesting. Yeah, I know. Look out. That might be too much for the baseball mind to wrap around, but I don't hate that. What I'm waiting for is any manager, and I'll use Schilt and the Padres as an example, to use what they consider to be their lesser reliever to pitch the ninth inning and save Suarez for the 10th inning. Because the 10th inning's harder. You have to start with a runner at second base. Nobody really does that. They pitch.
Yeah, but you got to get to the 10th inning.
I get you. But, I mean, well, that's what I'm saying. So is that just it?
It's kind of like.
Because I would. Like, they were tied last night. So you pitched Suarez in the ninth. That got you to the 10th. But even if you had gotten the lead in the 10th.
You know you can't win it in the ninth.
Right.
There has to be a 10th.
There has to be a 10th. So, to me, if I get the lead in the 10th, now if I've saved Suarez, I got him.
It's just something
to think about.
Like you pitched, and we got into this. I got into this last night on Twitter. You know, we could talk about Jason Adams' pitch sequence to Trent Grisham, you know, four straight changeups, whatever. First time Grisham's homered off in the off speed all year. He's been hitting the fastball. That's what he's hit out, you know, nine times or whatever. Last night again was the first one. You know, I can live at night losing on my best pitch. I can absolutely sleep. I threw my best pitch, mislocation, but I threw my best pitch. It's like that, Chris. If you lose with Estrada or Sean Reynolds, you're like, man, I had Robert Suarez right there. You know, I could have gotten us to extras and given us a chance. it's like kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. It is an interesting strategy, but like I want my best guys out there in the toughest spots. But that 10th may be tougher than that ninth because you got that runner on.
Does the lineup have anything to do with it?
Yeah.
I mean, is it a case-by-case basis?
Yeah.
If Mike Shildt threw Robert Suarez in the ninth and Xander Bogaerts clears the bases with a double and they're up three, he's really happy that he pitched Robert Suarez in the ninth
yeah.
and now has a comfortable cushion for Estrada or whoever he wants to bring out in the bottom of the 10th inning. And he had the good hitters coming up. I mean, they probably thought, we're probably going to score maybe multiple runs here in the 10th. Yeah, you know Mike Shildt is playing 3D chess.
I'm sure he's thinking about
yeah.
it. I haven't seen any manager save their closer for the 10th inning. Not just the Padres. I haven't seen any team do it yet. And I'm thinking somebody will try it.
It's our San Diego Padres Roundtable on 97.3 The Fan, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. And while that was maybe the most frustrating loss of the year, there was also so many positives in that game. Dylan Cease first and foremost, and hopefully he comes out of that healthy with the forearm cramp. The defense was terrific. And then there's Jackson Merrill, the kid who seemingly can do no wrong. Even when he goes on the injured list, he comes right back with two big games, a home run. And I just thought, well, let's talk a little bit about Jackson. And now that he's been here for a year, how much have you guys changed your opinion of Jackson Merrill's career floor and ceiling? What you thought he could be, and now what you're envisioning. Now he's a 22-year-old. What he can be in his career, Matt, for Jackson Merrill, you know, what's your anticipation now?
It's through the roof. I love this guy. He's just really, really good at all facets of the game. Last year when he was put on the big league club, I was, okay, let's see it. Let's see it happen. And then he started hitting home runs, and then he started doing all the things he did. This year it was, can he keep it up? Can he get better? And he already showed that. I mean, the sky is the limit for this guy, and I am so happy that he is locked up on the Padres for a very long time because he is going to contribute each and every day, no matter what he's doing in the game.
Woods baseball is such a tough game. It's hard to find things like that concern you about Jackson Merrill other than, yeah, baseball is a tough game, and you got to stay healthy. But otherwise, you feel really good about him.
I mean, you're asking about ceilings and stuff. I look at him, and I'm like, man, this is a guy I thought would hit 6 home runs a year. And now, you know, I'm looking at 30. I'm looking at 30 home run guy, you know, Jackson Merrill, 120 RBI guy. Like, he is the ability to grind ABs like he does. The lefty-on-lefty, Fried, you know, is nasty. I mean, you saw Fried was so surprised he hit that ball out and furious that he left it there. And Jackson gets the pitches up in the zone. He gets the pitches away. He gets the pitches everywhere. He covers the whole plate. Plays a good center field. How jarring was it to watch him get a bad read on a ball last night? I mean, it was jarring. It was like, whoa, is he okay? Is he concussed? Because he just doesn't happen. He's still learning that position, don't forget. Yeah.
Braden, I've heard this comp, and it's not an insult, even if it's a little bit Dodger-loving, but Freddie Freeman is a real good comp for Jackson.
Their swings are identical.
They are. Really, the left-handed swing is very similar. The baseball savvy is very similar. And I feel like Freddie Freeman's a Hall of Famer, you know, to be. So does that mean Jackson Merrill is a potential Hall of Famer in your mind?
I don't think just because of the comparison of Freddie Freeman. I just think in general. I mean, we talked about it yesterday on my show about, you know, who's the most valuable, and I know MVP stands for most valuable player, but when you talk about actual value, who's the most valuable player on this Padres team? I mean, aside from Tatis, I think Jackson Merrill is probably right there neck and neck with Manny. I think you can have multiple debates on that, but the way to watch this kid play, I think the difference for me is, you know, kind of that clutch stat that we don't talk about too much, those high leverage situations where he always seems like he comes through. I mean, last night, you know, he ends up getting hit by a pitch, but you know, the three guys that are the highest paid guys in the team strike out, right? And if Jackson gets a decent pitch, he's probably put one in the gap. I mean, he's been like that all the time. And when you see guys come up to the plate, I think, you know, for the Padres fans, at least for me, you see Fernando come up in a big spot, you're like, okay, I think we got a pretty good chance. Manny, I think you got a pretty good chance. I think you're pretty, like 50-50, trending a little bit towards the south when it comes to Xander Bogaerts. But you got Jackson Merrill up. I'm feeling as a fan, this is going to be a hit. Like, it's not even like a question. He's not going to get a hit. And in fact, it's surprising if he gets out in those particular situations. So with that kind of clutch gene that he has, I think it just makes his ceiling even higher. And so the comparison to Freddie Freeman looks very similar, but I think he can be a Hall of Famer without that comparison.
I agree with you, Braden, in that as a Padres fan, I feel more confident when Jackson Merrill comes to the plate than anyone now, yeah. Which is kind of crazy. I mean, Tatis is spectacular, but there's a little feast or famine. Obviously, the same with Manny. If I just know I need someone to come through, Chris, and this is weird, I feel the best about Jackson Merrill. And maybe psychologically, he's failed less than anybody else because he's been around less than anybody else. We've seen them all. All of the other guys go through struggles.
He also has a positive track record. We saw it last year several times.
Well, we've never seen anything really negative, I mean, about Jackson Merrill, which is weird in baseball.
It's funny you're bringing this up because when I was doing my swim this morning,
how was that?
It was nice. I feel good about it. Thank you, Braden.
You're welcome.
I decided for some crazy reason to go to my all-time Padres starting lineup. I don't know why.
As you're doing the freestyle in the pool?
As I was doing my freestyle in the pool. And I pretty much had decided on everything. And I'm taking a little brush back because I went with Khalil Green at shortstop. And I overlooked Ozzie Smith, but I didn't because Ozzie didn't play most of his career here. But that's another argument. When I got to center field, I didn't really have anybody. Steve Finley, I put Jackson Merrill in. And I said, this is ridiculous. He's played less than a year and a half. But I think we all feel something special with this kid that, as you know, it's just going to keep going, and he'll belong in the Padre all-time lineup someday. So why not put him there now?
Kevin McReynolds was good in the 80s. But yeah,
Trent Grisham erasure here on this program. It's my rough day to do it.
Cameron Maben is
rough day to do it.
So perhaps we saw Jackson Merrill hit a home run off a lefty in Max Fried, and perhaps the return will help. But one thing that has become clear over these first 30-plus games, Padres' offensive numbers against lefties are across the board lower than they are against right-handers. So let me ask you guys, what lineup change, if any, should Mike Schilt make against left-handed starters? And Paul, I mean, you know, Max Fried is really good. It's not an indictment that you're not putting six runs on the board against Max Fried. Sure. But, you know, should he mix things up a little bit when a lefty is in a lineup? Because he's pretty much doing the same lineups when guys are healthy, righty or lefty. Sometimes he moves Xander up a little bit, but that doesn't seem to be helping.
I think for me it's still a little early, small sample size to make any drastic changes. I think I really would just keep it going the way they have been. I can't complain with the results too much right now. I know there is some improvement to be made, but if it's overall, it's worked more than it's not, and it's still, I mean, we're a week into May, so I'm not quite ready to make any changes right now.
Woods.
I am.
Woods
you are. I'm moving Jackson Merrill up to the two hole ASAP. I want him getting as many ABs as he can. He's not wasted in the four or five, but I'm moving him to the two. I'm going Toddy, Merrill, Manny. I'll put friggin' Luis Arraez at cleanup. I really will. The days are gone of, you know, the big slugger in the four hole. Luis Arraez is a contact guy. You need contact from your four hole hitter. You need a guy that doesn't K a lot. He doesn't. I have no problem if I need to go lefty, righty, lefty. If I want to stick to that matchup, I have less than any problem putting Luis Arraez in the four instead of the two and moving Jackson Merrill up simply because I want him getting more ABs.
Yeah, Matt, I agree.
Even Toddy back-to-back is nasty.
I agree with Woods, Matt. I don't want to wait until fourth to see Jackson Merrill back anymore. You know, whether it's first or second, I want him getting up more often, more of the time.
I was actually thinking that, you know, I do like Jackson Merrill in the two. I didn't even consider moving Luis Arraez down, but I considered moving Jackson Merrill to three and putting Manny at four. I know we want Manny to get his at-bats. I know that Manny is on a hot streak right now. But Jackson Merrill is the guy who seems to be doing a lot more with his at-bats than other guys, and I know that he missed a ton of time. But I never even considered the two spot, and that would be pretty nasty, going Fernando right into Jackson Merrill, into Manny, and then Luis Arraez. That is pretty dangerous.
Hey, and if you want to get funny, you know, hey, Arraez on the bump. Great, Merrill's my leadoff hitter, and Toddy's my two-hole. You know what I mean? Like, there's all kinds of stuff you do. Schilty's not a big tinkerer. He doesn't tinker very much, even when we're in the midst of, 24 scoreless innings. He's sticking to his lineup. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
He doesn't like to tinker, which is why he might probably keep it. If he'd made any changes, it would stay righty-lefty, righty-lefty,
And I know, Braden, that a lot of praise was given to Fernando Tatis Jr. about his discipline, but at the leadoff hitter, he loves swinging at that first pitch. I don't really love that. I wouldn't mind putting Arise back there, even if it's lefty-lefty, and you go Arise, Merrill, because Arise is, he's Arise, lefty or righty. It doesn't make a huge difference. And then move Tatis back to the three-hole. I mean, then you're kind of lefty-lefty, righty-righty, but
it's just, you get the more ABs. It's more at-bats for your best hitters, I think.
I hate that idea, Ben. All right. I absolutely hate that idea. I mean, the lineup I put out before opening day, what I would like to see is what Woods just said. I like Fernando leadoff spot, more ABs. He's dynamic. He does a lot of scary things. I think people are afraid of him. I don't think people are afraid of Luis Arraez. The only time I'm afraid about Luis Arraez is with people on base because you know he's going to get a hit. With nobody on base, he gets a single. Sick. It's like walking the guy. I mean, I'm not that afraid of him.
He also clogs up the bases.
Right. So I like having Fernando lead off because it's just so dynamic. Right now, he's obviously trying to do a lot. Right, you know, he's doing too much. I think the low strikes getting called on him is affecting him a little bit. He's going to swing. Like he said, you know, to the media a couple of days ago, he's going to swing his way out of it, and that's what you're going to have to wait for him to do. But I'm not worried about him in the one spot. I love Jackson in the two. I think with those two guys at the top is not only do you have scary power, but you got fast guys on the bases. You got players that are dynamic that, again, like Wood said, getting them up as many times as possible. I think three or four could be Luis Arraez or Manny Machado. If you have Luis bat in the three spot, then you're waiting until the second inning potentially for Manny. And the cool thing about Arraez being four is if 1, 2, 3 do get out,
you lead off
with Arraez like you would do normally. So the lineup that Woods was talking about, I totally agree with. You know, I said it before, but Fernando leadoff, Jackson 2, Manny 3, Arraez 4. I think you can't really go too wrong with that.
Look at what the Dodgers do. They got three MVPs. Where do they hit them? Right. 1, 2, and 3. They don't mess around. They're not moving. It's 1, 2.
Acuna bats leadoff for the Braves. Yep. Otani bats leadoff for the Dodgers. Yeah, you're starting to see it at all levels of baseball right now in college. Get your best player up there as many times as possible.
As many ABs as you can get them.
Matt Scraby politely raised his hand because he wants to chime in. Matt?
Is Fernando locked in? Like, is this something that he just wants to have happen leading off every single game?
He didn't want it to happen, if I recall. He didn't want
I thought he did like to be the leader.
He does. He likes it now.
He likes it now.
Yeah, now he loves it.
So is there even like a thought that they can, I mean, we're not moving him, but is there a thought that they can move him? Or is he just locked in because that's where he wants to be?
I think you can't ever lock anybody in for a season in baseball anymore. I mean, lineups are so fluid nowadays. I don't expect Fernando Tatis Jr. to lead off 162 all the way through.
I kind of do.
You really do?
I kind of do.
Every game that he's in, I think he's leading off.
I kind of do. I think if he's healthy, I think he's your leadoff hitter.
That is not the rule, though. That's breaking the rule in baseball now.
Oh, yeah.
Because
is it because...
I mean, you have teams that have 162 games and 162 different lines.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you think about, like I just said, the Dodgers, they roll 1, 2, 3 most of the same time. You know, if those guys are all healthy, they're ready. It's Shohei, Mookie, Freddie, or some iteration of, and I think, you know, your best player getting the most ABs is what you want in this day and age. Trust me, as an old head, a little bit of an old head, it still blows my mind. I was telling my 7-year-old the other day, the way they used to do it was you had your fast guy, then a pretty good contact guy, then your best hitter, and then the big slugger, and then a pretty good slugger, then an okay slugger, then an average, another contact guy, then your catcher, then your pitcher. And then your two worst guys, 8 and 9. Bro, I mean, it just does not happen. Trent Grisham was lights out, and he was batting in, what, the 8? He lead off, he hits 8. Like, they mix it up like crazy there, too, sometimes.
Can you imagine a time travel machine? You go back to 1985 and show somebody that Kyle Schwarber has been a leadoff hitter. Like, they would lose
their mind. They would pass out. It's the four-hole. He's in the four-hole. He's got to be the four-hole hitter.
That would be a fun exercise, taking some of the great teams in the past and reworking their lineups for modern baseball. It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It's pizza royalty. All right, no roundtable draft today. We're going to try something a little bit different. Today, we are starting Padres Buy or Sell. This is a new feature where I will give you a Padres player, and you are going to consider them as a stock. You tell me if you want to buy, thinking their value is going to go up as the season goes on, or sell, thinking their value is high and their value may go down as the season goes. And today's buy or sell.
Are there any tariffs involved?
There's no tariffs.
Okay.
Chris, I'll let you go first for that comment. Gavin Sheets, buy or sell on Gavin Sheets going forward?
I'd buy Gavin Sheets right now, but I would sell when he's batting sixth against left-handed pitching. And again, when you just said the left-handed pitching thing, I don't think he can DH consistently against lefties. I don't know who you have to put in. You've sent down Connor Joe and Campusano, and you've cut Yuli Gurriel. So I think that's a spot that needs addressing.
That's part of the reason they've struggled against lefties. There's no,
I think so.
Gurriel struggled. Gonzalez hasn't done it. Iglesias is struggling now from the right-handed side. They just aren't getting anyone. Sheets, by the way, is hitting .278, four homers, 14 runs batted in, .786. He certainly overperformed what any of us have expected, Paul. Can we continue to expect that or better going forward? Buy or sell?
Yeah, so it's weird. I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I buy.
It's a hold.
Yeah, I'm holding that.
It's a hold. Diamond hands.
Like, I buy in the sense that I do think there is a place for him on this team, and he deserves his shots. But we kind of saw it with the everyday opportunity. It wasn't working out very well. He wasn't looking comfortable, couldn't really get into a groove. So I'm selling on him being like an everyday part of the lineup, but I'm buying on, that's a guy that you want on your bench. You want a guy on your roster. So I guess I'm holding.
Holding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want this to seem as like a knock, Woods, on a player if you say sell. But with Gavin Sheets, if someone, you know, said, fell in love, another GM fell in love with Gavin Sheets, and we need his left-handed bat in our lineup, and we'll give you a top prospect for him right now. If I'm AJ Preller, I'm jumping at that. I'm selling because I don't know that Gavin Sheets is going to do better than a .786 OPS going forward.
Yeah, we're not really in a position to get rid of any of
no.
our guys that are playing right. well at this point for a top prospect. But, you know, I'm buying on Gavin Sheets. I do think, you know, Chris makes a good point. You know, you sent down Campy, who kind of, some people thought, and I think some people in the organization thought, all right, he's figured it out a little bit. Didn't have a good 14 at-bats or whatever he had. It's 14 at-bats. Like, somebody's going to need to hit against left-handed pitching from the right side in the designated hitter spot. You can use that spot to get Manny off his feet. Then you got Jose Iglesias in the lineup. I mean, what do you do? Do you just use it as a rotator to get guys off their feet? Maybe. But at this point, getting another right-handed bat, somebody that could play left field, I'll buy on Gavin Sheets for now. I think there is more to come with him. I see some good swings from him. I really do. I see a good approach a lot of the time. And I like what I see from Gavin Sheets. Got a couple of hits off some tough lefties, too. Like, he's I'm buying on him.
Braden, where do you temperature wise on Gavin Sheets here?
Well, the part of the exercise is like, do we think he's going to be better or worse than what he is right now? I'd probably sell. But I don't think he's going to be much worse than he currently is. He's off to a good year. I think to ask him to do anything more than he's already doing right now is going to be a tough ask for the Padres. If it works out, that's great. But I'm more in line with what Paul's saying, kind of hold. But if I had to buy or sell, and that's my only options, I'm probably going to sell.
I mean, I really like him as a seven hitter.
Yes.
God, I really like. I don't like him as a two hitter.
No.
I don't like him
as an any hitter against lefties, though. And even though he got a couple of hits.
Yeah, and you know, they may need to address that later. Maddie, have you done buy or sell yet?
Man, he's a tough player.
He's going to buy because he was blown away when we interviewed him at spring training of just how massive this guy is.
Oh, Gavin Sheets is a big human being. I'm going to buy as long as he's in the second half of the part of the lineup, because we've already seen what happens when he gets moved up into the top half of the lineup. It's not good. He's exposed there. But I'm going to buy because I do think that he has something there, like Woods said. He has good at-bats. He has the power. I'm just not willing to give up on him yet.
Afternoon show with the end of day buy and sell from the stock market.
Yeah, there you go. Now, as we hit the halfway part of our show today, I got a question that I think is going to require a little bit of reflection for everybody. And I don't want this to seem condescending, but in our role as hosts and talking to so many fans and talking about the team all day long and on social media, you get a sense of where the fan base kind of lies on the team. So the question is, what do you think is the biggest misperception about this San Diego Padres team shared by a large number of Padres fans, where you feel like the fan base kind of gets it wrong about the San Diego Padres? And I'll start then, just as you guys think about it, because
a bold segment idea like to just say you're all stupid.
It's not, but the thing that's frustrated me, especially these past 2 days, is the immediate hate on the bullpen as soon as they give up a run.
Oh, God.
And how quickly...
We forget.
It seems as though fans will turn on a reliever for having a Jason Adam for missing a pitch, for an Adrian Morejon has really been good for an extended period of time. Yeah. Even a Wandy Peralta, and I understand the skepticism about Wandy Peralta. He was bad last year. He's been really solid this year, and the role that he's being asked, hey, try to get a ground ball when you come in. You've got that tool. It's not always going to work for any pitcher, especially relievers in the back end of your bullpen, but you need those guys, and the Padres have put together what I think is an outstanding pen, one that I wouldn't probably trade any team in baseball for their pen. And I
people
feel
are
like
calling it a weapon that they have.
That's what I think too. And in just a couple of days' time, Chris, it just feels like everyone's turned on the Padres bullpen. If your name's not Robert Suarez, essentially,
they gave up 11 earned runs out of the bullpen the first 34 games. Gave up 13 the last two games. So I see why people are a little frustrated, but. They made it look automatic with a lead in the 7th-8th inning that the game was over. It's never automatic, and now we've been reminded of that. But no, I don't. The quick, you know, ability for fans to, you know, change their tune based on one game, that's not surprising to me. But where I think the fans miss the most is just on Bogaerts. I'm just gonna. Yeah, you know, we could open a whole another can of worms with this, but blaming him for everything that's wrong with this franchise,
I'm gonna get so many.
It's just getting annoying to me. So that's the thing I think everyone misses on.
Braden,
on top of that, and every time I defend Bogaerts, it's not more so that I'm telling you like he's an all-star for the Padres because he's not. It's more to me the general term of like the perfect roster that the Padres will never have, and I think a lot of fans just think that. Anytime one player seems to be not playing up to expectations or his contract, the Padres can go out and replace him with the best player in that position.
Right.
Like it's so easy to do, where the reality is, look, the Padres spent a lot of good money, and they've invested in the team, but the Padres are still not like the Dodgers who can buy their way out of problems. Like they've hit, I think, on Manny. I think they hit on Fernando. I think so far it's hitting with Jackson Merrill, some of these big contracts they've handed out. And you know what? They're bound to get one that's probably not going to work out in Xander Bogaerts. And the thing is, if you're the Dodgers, you can go buy your way out of it and go replace them with somebody else and eat the money. If you're the Padres, you can't necessarily do that, even though a lot of people would like to see that. So for me, it's the perfect roster that is so unobtainable and will never happen that leads to all these arguments of the bullpen, and, of Xander Bogaerts, and I think a lot of the problems that we have.
And Woods, about, oh, I'm sorry, we'll I shouldn't interrupt, but I will because I'm old enough to do so, I think. Now, I was just going to say that Bogaerts is playing with his contract. I haven't heard one complaint about Yu Darvish, who sat out almost all of last season, we don't know why, and hasn't pitched at all this season. He also was signed to a gigantic contract, et cetera. That's just another thing to think about.
Well, I think, Woods, that sometimes fans don't seem to realize that other teams have as many problems or more than the Padres do.
Yeah.
Even the Dodgers have problems at the bottom of their lineup, sure. in their bullpen with injuries. The Yankees. Do you think Yankees fans are excited about having Yorvi Vivas, you know, in the lineup right. almost every single day?
The Dodgers employ Austin Barnes and
Miguel Rojas. They could have Xander Bogaerts for free, putting it right there. They wouldn't in an instant
Chris
add Taylor's him to their lineup.
Still on the Dodgers.
They would do that. Other teams have plenty of holes, most of them more than the Padres do. The Padres aren't perfect, but no baseball team is.
The thing for me, to answer your question, Benny, is I cannot stand they're disinterested. I'll tell you, man. I've seen the Padres look disinterested before. I have not seen the Padres look disinterested since Schulte took over. I haven't. That's a fact. I will defend that. He just looked like he didn't care. Bro, if that's what you're seeing from this team on a night-in, night-out basis, I can't help you. I cannot. You're eating paint chips, man. You really are. Like,
you got Xander Bogaerts admitting that he's making adjustments in the middle of at-bats, yeah, which is psychotic,
right,
by the way.
Right.
And we're sitting there going like, he doesn't care.
That's I've never gotten that. Honestly, like, I've seen disinterested Padres baseball. I've seen it. We've seen it. We covered this team for a long time, Benny. I haven't seen it in a while. And that's what bums me out. Oh, Manny or Toddy, looks like he didn't even care that a bit. Bro, I promise you, those guys want to succeed. We just got into it with our boss here, not Adam. He's like, Manny's got to come through. Manny's got to come through. He blew it on Tuesday and Wednesday. I go, what do you do on Monday? Well, he came through with a hit. I go, all right, so in clutch situations, what was he? He was 1-for-3. That's 333. You know where that gets you? Cooperstown. And he just walked away.
He's still going to fail 70% of the time.
He walked away. You don't get it. I go, no, I get it.
You can't do it every time.
It's hard. They care. Nobody wants to come through more than Manny and Xander and Toddy and all those guys. I love this team. I love them. And I really see effort from them on a nightly basis. I really do. And I see the sheer desire to win. You're not going to go 162-0. You're not going to bat 1,000 in the ninth inning in clutch situations. It's just not going to happen.
The Schilt factor is interesting. Can you imagine a relief pitcher telling Mike Schilt, no, I don't pitch the eighth inning.
Right.
Yeah, I'm good.
I've already pitched 2 days in a row. I'm not going out there.
These guys are grinding. So. They're grinding for wins, man. They are. They're trying. I don't see a lack of effort, so I really don't like they look disinterested. It's a long season. You could absolutely understand in a 12-3 game going, all right, I have no problem with. At that point, I don't care. But these guys are in. They don't get blown out. Now, they don't blow a lot of teams out. They don't get blown out very much. That shows me this team is fighting, man, every single day.
Yeah, it's baseball. So every day there's always going to be something you're concerned about. You know, yesterday it was the bullpen. Another day it might be Xander's defense at short. But overall, Matt, there's not a lot of major concerns right now with the Padres. There's always the background concerns. Will the starting pitching hold up?
Will they slug more
of the season? Yeah, can they get some more home runs? But in terms of the big picture, it's pretty solid right now for the Padres, and I just hope fans kind of understand that.
Extremely solid. I mean, the one thing that I can't stand when I get in my DMs is that you're shilling for the team,
yeah, or
you're not telling the truth. You're not revealing the full picture. It's like, what am I not revealing that you want to hear? Because I cannot crush this team for things when they're 28 and
10 over 500, 23 yeah, yeah. and 12.
Like the beginning of the season has been awesome. So I don't know why people are complaining. The other thing that we get a lot is just DFA them. Just DFA him.
Right.
Everybody wants to be DFA'd. And one thing I will say to fans is look up some stats before you come at me, because you're telling me Wandy Peralta sucks, and then you look up his stats and he gave up 2 runs before that night. So it's just a lot of hot takes out there.
Bullpen's great, but this guy sucks, this guy sucks, this guy sucks, and this guy sucks.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Was it very good then or not?
Can we just be happy that this team's winning?
You don't get to 23-12 with luck. You don't. It takes some skill, and it takes some execution. And the last two nights, the execution has been off. I think the processes have been fine. I think they've been beyond fine. But the execution has been off. And Adrian Morejon's sinker wasn't sinking. Gave up some soft singles, and next thing you know, the game's out of hand. Jason Adam goes with his best pitch, floats in the inner half. Grisham puts it out. But the processes have been great. It's sometimes execution falters, and I do believe in this. I'll say this right now. I believe in this team tenfold more than I did the very first round table we did. Tenfold. That's what they've inspired me to feel after 35 games or whatever, however many games they played. Tenfold. That's how much more I believe in them.
I would like to refine my answer and basically just say people who give up on the team after one bad day.
But they never
one
give
bad
up.
Play.
They never give up.
No,
they're
don't.
Always bad.
They don't, but they're in my DMs telling me that they're done with this team, and I know that they're not telling me the truth, but the reaction is so strong sometimes.
It's funny to hear him say that because this
I've come
is
a long
the guy,
way. Reactor.
No, he's the guy that used to always say this to Tony and I when they lose a game.
I used to be the overreactor.
I've learned, Chris. Okay, I've learned.
It's called wisdom.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. And I was so surprised last week when we got near the end of the program, and y'all brought up that I didn't have a seventh inning stretch.
Yes.
I thought maybe you'd be relieved, but you seemed to miss it. So it's coming back this week, a little break from our baseball topics. And I picked this one specifically for a day that Tony Gwynn Jr. was not around to embarrass us.
Oh, no.
We are going to go down the line. I want to know what each of you considers your personal single greatest athletic accomplishment from any stage of your life.
Oh, I love
and this.
This
is more for the humor value than the actual sports value. There was one college pitcher here among us in Chris Ella. Matt, what was your biggest sports achievement?
I know exactly where I'm going to go with this. I've said it many times when I used to do a podcast with two former NFL players. The thing was, I had a really, really nice sack in high school.
Nice.
I came off the edge.
I'm sorry, you had a what?
Just, yeah,
a nice,
sorry.
He said a nice sack.
Pause. A quarterback sack.
Pause.
Quarterback sack. I should have said that. I came, came off the edge, unblocked. And the best thing was, is I heard the guy go, "Oh!" as I hit him, and then I felt, and I stood up, and I was like, "Yeah!" And I realized the play was still going on, or not the play wasn't still going on, but no one was really cheering with me. I was just cheering by myself. But that was my biggest accomplishment, was one quarterback sack in high school.
Your nice sack is your biggest accomplishment.
That's right.
Woods?
Only in high school, though. It's only when it was in
You're still playing adult baseball to this day.
Yeah.
What would you consider your top athletic achievement?
Probably the probably about 10 years ago, I played all nine positions in one game.
Yeah.
This was awesome. And I did it in order. You know, started on the mound, caught the second.
Posey.
Went all the way around. I still have the baseball from that. It just says all nine on it. I've hit a couple bombs. That feels better than anything I've ever felt. But I'd say playing all nine in a game was my greatest athletic achievement.
Pauly Rindel played multiple sports in high school.
Yeah. Gosh, I would have to say just dunking a basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
That is really impressive.
I didn't hit a lot of home runs, but that's a great feeling. You know, hitting a drive 375 down the middle feels great. Dunking a basketball was something I was really like. I was always close, but I couldn't palm the ball and get a good grip on it. I could like jump up and grab the rim and hang on the rim. I just couldn't get high enough to like get the ball up and over. And finally, like, I was feeling pretty good. It was I was totally cherry picking. I played no defense. I was hanging out like towards the half court line than the 3-point line. And as soon as we got a ball, I was gone. And I just every bit of lack of athletic ability that I had, it took to get up there and barely put it down. It was such a fun feeling.
That is awesome.
All right, Braden, your top athletic achievement.
I mean, from a softball perspective, I do like backpicking people. Chris sees that sometimes at the Sportsplex. But you know, I hit a home run one time in club baseball in college, which was cool. But to me, the without even knowing it, the last ever football game I played, I was able to have I had a tackle on kickoff where it was just me coming down, and they had a lead blocker and the guy returning the ball, and I blew up the lead blocker into the returner for a tackle that nice. Pinned him back on the 9-yard line. I got a fumble recovery that game. I got a pick that game. Probably the best game I've ever played in my high school
turnover
football
machine.
Career. And the next week we were supposed to play. We had an ineligible, self-reported player. I'm still upset with CIF to this day about the technicality of just never being able to play football again. But then, like we had to forfeit the playoffs at that point. So that was my last ever football game that I played. Went out on top. Didn't even realize it until, you know, years after. I'm like, well, that was the last game I played. That's a nice way to go out. And a lot of kids that I coach, man, you tell them every day, like, this, you know, play like your last, and you never know when that's going to be. And I was fortunate enough to not know that was my last game and have a really good game. So that's my prime
idea. It's amazing how proud we are of such minor achievements. Now, Chris, you actually played with some real big-time names when
like
you
Tony
were
Gwynn,
in college. Yeah. Bud Black.
Bud was a little before me, but okay. I got.
I was going to say, how old are you?
Pretty old.
Casey Stengel and you playing catch. It's amazing.
As Scraby says, I was on the train rides with Babe Ruth.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That was a highlight.
How was it trying to strike out Honus Wagner?
Yeah, he's tough. You got to get hit the corner. As a pitcher, the one thing that jumped to my mind was in an adult Sunday game, I homered down the line at Morse High School. Right down the right field line. It's about 202 feet.
Yeah.
Just dropped over the wall. But I will say, running around those bases, that's the only time I ever did that. But
did you get the silent treatment after?
I don't remember. I was so
excited.
Yeah,
you black out.
Yeah.
Right. Full blackout. You have no recollection.
But it's a distant second to accomplishing what I did in 1998, which was run a marathon.
Wow.
I don't think I'll ever approach something like that again. And preparing for it for 6 months and actually accomplishing it,
that's
amazing. That stands
out. That is
out.
Amazing.
You know, Sarah's 74-year-old mom's running a 125-mile race right now.
Okay, as we speak.
Yeah, there are people who can put marathons to shame.
She ran 25?
She ran 30 miles yesterday. Yesterday. 30.
Why?
That's a lot.
All right. And finally, I've mentioned it before. I played Division III college golf, and I cannot stress what a pathetically low level of golf that is. Where
still better than most of us.
I mean, we were playing teams that, like Caltech, they were lucky if anyone broke 100 in any of their matches. So it was as low as it got. I played 3 seasons, very mediocre. Finally, senior year, I was doing okay, and then we got to the conference tournaments. 2 conference tournaments, and I won one of them with a 70, 2 under par.
Woo, nice.
And then in the conference championship, 36 holes at Brookside, the course that's the parking lot for the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. I shot, I think it was 73, 75, and I finished tied for third. And we got back, and they did the end of conference awards, and I was blown away when one of the coaches who was announcing said, and second team, all Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, Ben Higgins from Pomona Pitzer.
Yeah.
Wow, I was like, nice. Holy cow, I just made an all-league team. I'm not even an athlete. That was.
Do you have a trophy?
I did have a ribbon, actually.
Oh, wow.
Second team, all conference.
You left
can,
out
we go,
your...
can we go down the line, speaking of golf? How many hole-in-ones do you have,
one.
If any? You do have one.
One all-time was 3 years ago at Goat Hill.
Okay,
that's it.
I'm a zero.
One.
Woods
so
has
we have
one,
two
too.
Ones. Okay.
Two hole in ones.
Now, real quick, this is probably a question for Chris or Scraby. What would Tony have said? And I hope it's not the knock against Trevor Hawkins.
Probably.
Oh, you
probably
know what? Yeah. I hate to tell you, that does stick out. He mentions that it's a highlight for him.
How can he not?
I hate to tell
it's a huge highlight.
Not an inside the park home run?
You have moments like getting drafted or getting signed or whatever, but like. I was trying to think, and I'm like,
no, hitting
I'm
going to
tell you,
Trevor.
That's it.
Yeah. I think that's a big one, but I'm gonna give you one that he may come up with. His last high school basketball game at Poway High,
he
hit a half court shot at the buzzer to win the game.
Woo, wow,
it was carried off the court. I'm pretty sure he'd mention that.
Tony would play in the NBA over baseball in a heartbeat.
He would probably bring that one up.
All right, it's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Looking ahead, Padres heading to Colorado. Woods is shaking in his shoes over there.
Already
the Padres take
week,
on
right?
the Rockies. But I want to center on the Rockies for a second. I mean, it must be tougher right now to be a Rockies fan than any other fan base in baseball. You're in a division where all other 4 teams look like they're pretty much all in to make the playoffs, and there's not much you can do at this point. You're rebuilding, you've got nothing to cheer for. You're 6-29. Chris, I know you'll have some thoughts on this. If you were a Rockies fan, Woods, what would you want your team to try to do right now at this point in time?
I really would want them I mean, it's kind of hard. You won 6 games so far this season. But I'm telling you, man, anybody with value, I'm just going to try the rebuild hard, like the hard, hard rebuild. Young prospects, as many of them as I can get, maybe the little bit of the Baltimore Orioles way right now. And anybody with any value, you know, that I don't see as part of a 500 contending team, you got to go. And I'm going to start grabbing up as many prospects as I can, and then down the road you use those for capital if you need and develop them. But it really needs like a complete organizational overhaul at this point.
Yeah, Braden, the tough part is if you're in football, you tank for a quarterback and you hope to jumpstart the rebuild, but you can't even really do that in baseball. Sure, they're going to get the first pick, maybe the second pick if the White Sox struggle, but that's not going to fix your team, not at least for several years. What do you do right now if you're the Colorado Rockies playing in the NL West?
And there's a lottery now in baseball, right? So like they're not even guaranteed one of the top picks.
They add the lottery now too? Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they have the lottery now, so they don't even get a guaranteed number one pick. So I do exactly what – anything that's not tied down to the ship's getting thrown overboard 100%. Right now. I mean, and I'm talking about even young players. I mean, you start looking at some of the guys that they have up, like a Michael Tolia. Is he part of your plans in the next 5 years? I mean, by the time you can get good, Michael Tolia is going to need a new contract. Yeah. You might as well ship him off and just start shipping off everybody you possibly can. And now here's the thing. We talked to people and – you know, I got friends and family in Denver. They go to Rockies games regardless of how good they are because they like the park and they think it's a cool place to be. So I don't think you're going to piss off too many people aside from maybe some diehards, but you got to go long haul flip like the Orioles did.
You need that generational player. You know, that's a nation that had guys that had some generational type players when they first burst on the scene, Benny. Think about some of the great players that have come through Colorado. You need to find that Todd Helton. You need to find that Dante Bichette.
Larry Walker.
The Larry Walker. You need to find those guys again. And they haven't done it. They have some solid, solid players. Guys that I would love, you know, to grab for the San Diego Padres, certainly. But I would be trying to restock.
Paulie, how long has Dick Manfort owned the team?
Owner? Have
they been competitive since he's been
not really, the owner? No. I mean, it's so much more easy to stomach. Even if it's football, guess what? You go, you do your tailgate party, you get your grill, you know, your team loses. It's only 8 home games
once a week.
It's once a week. That's 81 home games of this is just got to be miserable.
Isn't the run differential like minus 90 or something?
I think what they need to do, having watched them a little closer than most people, because my family and wife's from Denver, the Rockies were relevant one stretch of time in their existence, and that's when they crushed the baseball. They have spent the last 20 years trying to build a pitching staff.
Yes.
They have drafted all pitchers. They've signed all pitchers. And guess what? They all suck. Because nobody can be a good pitcher in that ballpark. I think we've come to the realization by now.
They had fool's gold that 1 year and they re-signed everybody.
Yeah, right. But, you know, look, you can pitch one good game there, but you can't do it for a whole season. So if I was the Rockies, yes, develop young players, trade whoever. But I would start going back to try to find 6 or 7 mashers. They had Ellis Burks hit 40 home runs batting 8th 1 year. Just try to outscore teams. Yeah. Beat their pitching staffs up like you used to.
Use your park to your advantage.
Right.
Yes. Right.
Do what you do best.
Like the Yankees do.
Instead of trying to do what you do worst.
Didn't that, even if you're winning games 10-8 earlier in the season, doesn't that wear down your pitching staff
so badly by the end of the year? Everyone hated coming to Colorado at all.
You got to play 81 road games,
but
too.
I don't know. The pitching thing hasn't worked. They don't have any pitchers, so I would try the other.
Well, Padres won 5 games against the Rockies last year. They can match that or even surpass it in the first 2 series this year, and everything is lined up for the Padres. The Rockies have to play a doubleheader Thursday going into that series. I mean, this is one of those, like, I think sneakily important series, Woods, for the Padres coming up.
Man, it always is. And anytime you play the lesser thans, and they're about as lesser than as it gets, you know, you have to handle business. And it's weird to say, but, you know, winning 2 out of 3, I'll be like, ugh, why didn't we win the third? You got to start tomorrow night. You know, Randy Vasquez, like Chris just said, I don't know how you approach a start if you're Randy Vasquez.
I mean, a guy who pitches to a lot of contact
in Coors
Field isn't necessarily the recipe for success.
It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite series.
He's never my favorite,
It's not my favorite, but you do need to handle business. If you handle business in Colorado, you have just had a really successful road trip. A really successful road trip. Those 2 losses in New York notwithstanding. That's a first-place team. They're really good. And you played hard in 2 of those 3 games.
I do think having a good defense is underrated at Coors. You're not getting hit to every ball.
You can't give up any extra outs.
Having some speedsters, and the Padres do have, I think, a well-built defense for Coors Field. Not many errors. They get the balls in the outfield. that's kind of a good recipe for success in that ballpark.
Brandon Lockridge is starting in left field for me every game. I mean, every single game, he's my left fielder. Jackson's in center. Toddy's in right. I'll take what I get hit from him offensively. But B-Lock's out there for the next three for me.
And I know we're wrapping up, but welcome back, Jake Cronenworth.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, could be good to see Crony back. Nice soft landing spot. Colorado, get some balls in the gap.
And I just got a call from the people from Denver. The folks on the Rockies Roundtable would like to change places with us for a month.
Yeah, I'm sure
they're trying to fix the Padres right now.
Discussions every week.
Oh my
well,
God.
We will be back next week. Padres will be in the middle of another American League homestand against the Angels and the Mariners coming to town for the Vetter Cup. So we will talk to you next Thursday morning at 10 a.m. for another commercial-free roundtable. Again, it is presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. And the Padres kind of need to make hay. We went through the schedule over this next month or so. This is the time where the Padres can really build up some wins against teams that are at the bottom of the standings. But it's baseball. It doesn't always work as simply as you'd like it to work out. All right, that is it for us. For Matt Scraby, for Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Braden Sprennett, and Chris Ello, I'm Ben Higgins. Should have Tony Gwynn Jr. back with us next week as well. Thank you all for joining us today on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza.